Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier. Game on. Go.
Welcome back to Game On. After Dunica's revelation that he thinks he's pregnant, or felt he was pregnant at some stage, I think we'll move on to Patrick Reid. Where else could you go from there? Only to Patrick Reid. The WGC Mexico Championships of the weekend. Say he's going to block out all the noise, guys. Is he going to have to?
Patrick Reid is... I thought it was so funny to see Patrick Reid and Bryson DeChambeau going down the stretch to try and win a World Golf Championship event. Two players who are, let's say it, in the eye of different storms over the last, certainly a few months, and maybe longer than that in Reid's case. Reid won it brilliantly. Whatever you think about him, he was he's a beautiful player. It's just a pity that there's going to be a cloud over for the rest of his life with regard to, obviously, the allegations of cheating, which are out there now and they're pretty open. And he'll have to deal with that for the rest of his life. And he seems to be dealing with it very, very well. It didn't affect him one iota. In spite of the fact that last week was a particular eye of the storm week for him, with both Brooks Koepka effectively saying that he has been cheating in the past, and Peter Costas, who's a hugely highly regarded commentator in the game and a coach of Paul Casey and a voice in CBS for more than 30 years, an on-course reporter. And if people didn't hear what Peter Costas said in a podcast for the No Laying Up podcast, he said that on four occasions when he was on course following Patrick Reid, he saw instances where Reid broke the rules of golf and didn't do so accidentally.
Gary Murphy, you were an on-course reporter as well. So when Peter Costas is watching that up close and personal and watching Patrick Reid cheat effectively, is it not an obligation on him to say so as well? Or can he say so, or should he say so when he saw that happening?
I think the incident which he was chatting about, and you do see it as an on-course commentator where, you know, because the first thing you do is you look at the light and you determine what kind of shot the player is or is not able to play. And the incident was, I think he did a 300-yard shot at a heavy rough. So it was physically impossible to get the ball, you know, said distance really. And he put four different clubs in behind the ball. And when Peter Costas looked at it, he thought, well, it's just a sandwich back into play because the lie was that heavy. And he ended up hitting a three wood out of it. So it's this grey area, though, of, you know, as an on-course commentator, maybe if you have a five-year contract, you might say something quite strong. But if you're working week to week like I normally do, you don't generally want to...
Fall out with Patrick Reid.
Well, this is the problem, too, where... You do have a lot of commentary. There's a lot of vanilla there. There's a lot of hugging and kissing going on. And at times, I think you're not allowed to say it as it is. I think that was Peter Costas' gripe with the network in the States and the power of the PGA Tour, where they're now almost controlling commentary because we have to sell it like it's this wonderful, perfect thing. And that's rubbish, really.
Greg, he's almost unrepentant and unaffected by it.
There's no almost about it. You know, there isn't any almost about it. He's a particular type of character who's got a neck like a jockey's, if you pardon the expression. And he has no...
Jeez, I think my neck is quite twisted.
Yeah, I know. It's like, he honestly has no... It seems to be not affected by all of the criticism. In fact, it seems to have emboldened him. But he's always been a certain type of character. When he won... the World Golf Championship event in Doral a few years ago, he was in the world's, just outside the world's top 20 at the time, but he said he felt that he was one of the top five players in the world, and he's still in his 20s, and he's won, I think it's 8 times he's won now. He's won a major and he's won a World Golf Championship event. You have to take note of this guy as well for what he did at the Ryder Cup in 2016 when Rory came out roaring, "I want, you know, Patrick Reid and the number one singles thing on Sunday because Europe were behind and I'm going to lead the European charge." And Rory played great for the first 8 holes. Problem was, so too the Patrick Reid. And then Patrick Reid overtook, you know, the quality of golf that Rory was playing by just consistently facing down everything that Rory could throw at him, admittedly with the crowd behind him. But this guy has made of strong stuff in terms of his golf game and his ability to resist criticism. But is he made of strong stuff in the real heart of the battle, where he feels that he has to do things which are being questioned to the level that they are? Why he's doing it with the level of talent that he has is beyond me. Whether or not, I don't know. I find it hard to understand how someone so talented has done what he has done to make himself questioned to the degree that he is in terms of his character.
And that's probably a stigma, Gary, he's never going to lose.
No, nor should he. But the power here is not with Patrick Reed. The power here is with the viewer. I love watching golf. I mean, it's a bit of a busman's holiday, but I actually still love watching golf. And I love watching golf on a Sunday night because that's payday. That's when it's the tournament's determined. Guy lifts the trophy. I was obviously rooting for Rory at the start of the day. It didn't happen for him. And then I was really excited to see Bryson DeChambeau play the golf that he played, for a guy that's completely transformed his body in the last kind of 6 months. And he does, I find him a really interesting character. He does the thing his own way. And then he faltered. You know, he got a bit nervous and he faltered. And Patrick Reed came through. And once he had his tee shot onto the 17th, I stopped watching the golf. Never ever done that on a Sunday night, because I don't want to see him winning golf tournaments, because I think he's bad for the game. I think it's vile, his behaviour. And as I said earlier, you know, Wayne Riley then has to interview him afterwards and we all have to go, you know, what a great player you are. And it's just not the case, because, you know, I'd probably still be on tour if I could improve my eye every so often. But you can't, because that's the game that we play. And he can, you know, he can run this narrative of I'm trying to be the best version of myself, but the best version of himself is no good, really. And the power will always be with the viewer, because the viewer can decide not to watch. And when viewers decide not to watch, then the sport has a problem.
I
think there's one thing which needs to be drawn attention to, which is back at the Hero World Challenge in December, when it was very clear that Patrick Reed moved sand behind the ball in a waste area. You can't do that. You cannot improve your lie. And it was very clear. The camera caught it. But he gave his version of events to Mark Russell, the referee, and Mark Russell completely exonerated him immediately.
Yeah.
And it was awful. It was clear to the viewer what had happened. Gary's spot on. Like, you're insulting the viewer's intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, the PGA Tour just want this to go away, you know, it won't go away.
It's like someone getting caught on CCTV outside a chipper boxing the head off someone and going, no, I didn't do it. No, it wasn't me. No, it kind of was, because we saw it on the telly. And it's a sociopath, really, at the best.
Well, the PGA Tour, you know, they might get rid of Patrick Reed to the Premiership. The way things are going, Rory's not going, but Patrick Reed might go to the Premier League. We have a clip from Andrew Gardiner speaking about it last week.
What I will say is that the backing that we have is more than sufficient. And the number of inquiries we've had from others in recent weeks who would like to support us has, of course, been nice. But we have sufficient backing to ensure that if, as I say, the players and the fans want this to happen, it will happen properly.
Guys, they have the money. They're not going to get Rory. The PGA might give him Patrick Reed, but will they get anybody else?
It's fascinating, really. I listened to that whole piece. I thought his interview was compelling. I don't know why Rick Shields' golf show podcast got that interview.
Oh, I think I know.
Go on, Greg, tell us.
Well, Rick Shields is a very good YouTuber. He's seen a niche. He's a North of England professional in the Lancashire area. And he obviously saw a niche in getting on YouTube and doing golf club reviews when they came out. And he's done very well. And he's a pretty big YouTube golf star in terms of the people who want to buy a new golf club. The newest driver that comes out, they can go to Rick Shields' demonstration of it on a podcast or on a YouTube video. And there's loads of them. And he's gone into doing much more things, very interesting stuff. But he ain't a journalist. And he's not asking searing questions. And they, you know, what's a journalist? Some people call themselves journalists, even if they haven't gone to college or if they haven't gone through the system of newspapers, they may want to call themselves journalists. But they didn't go to somebody who was going to ask really tough questions.
Yeah.
And they went and they literally got a very soft ride from in an hour and a half of a podcast when I think the words Saudi Arabia were mentioned after about an hour and something minutes.
Yeah, it was funny.
The money's coming from, basically.
I was listening to it, and I wouldn't call myself a journalist, but I'd certainly call myself somebody that has a vested interest in the sport and have a, you know, quite an emotional buy-in on what happens to our game. And this is a huge thing that's potentially going to happen. And I just thought it was the wrong platform initially for Andrew Gardner to get his... I thought he did really well, but he did really well because he was allowed to do really well. And it was an hour and 20 minutes. And I thought after 20 minutes, like, why? He hasn't gone near him in the first...
Didn't lay a glove on him the first
20 minutes.
Just to clarify, Andrew Gardner is the World Premier League Chief Executive Officer. So that's just to clarify, these comments about explaining what the Premier League is all about came from someone who obviously is someone who knows everything about it. And one of the things which he said was that they've been planning to do this for 6 years. This has been in the ether since around 2014. And they have really been looking at this, steadily putting it together. There's a big machine behind this. And this is not just going to go away because Rory McIlroy said last week that I'm out. This is going to stay here. And we have to go back to other instances, like back in 1968, when the PGA Tour split from the PGA of America. The PGA of America ran all the golf tournaments, and all the players came from the PGA of America's membership, 23,000 of them, up to 1968. And then the PGA Tour was formed, and it broke away from the PGA Tour of America, which created what we have now, the PGA Tour. And so it's happened before.
Yeah.
So why shouldn't it, couldn't it possibly happen again? This is very, very serious. This is got an awful lot of things going for it, which are interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of 48 players, all the best players in the world, in a shotgun start. For those who don't know what a shotgun start is, it's basically everybody starting at the same time. 5-hour telecast. Everybody's on the course at the same time, and it's concentrated with the best players in the world with no cut, playing for 3 consecutive days for a massive pot of money, minimum 10 million, 2 million minimum to the winner. And you're going to have television cameras everywhere. I'd say they'll all be mic'd up. There'll be a huge television revolution in how the game is portrayed, all in the positive side of making it more entertaining. They have examined everything that's been done in the telecasts of golf, which they feel can be improved. And it's much, much more than simply a new Premier League for the elite in the game. It's all about improving the viewer and fan experience.
That's fair enough. But the one thing I don't get is there's going to be a demotion and a promotion into it from the bottom.
Yeah.
So where are they going to demote and promote from?
Well, his point on it made sense in the view, if you single out the Premier League in England when that first started, and it looked like, you know, there's going to be a breakaway of 20 teams, and the traditional 92 teams in the league, you know, they're going to be affected by it. But the product is filtered down. You know, the championship is now still good. You get promoted and demoted, obviously, to and from that. But the money has trickled down through the sport of soccer or football or whatever you want to call it in England. And that's their philosophy for this. My only problem with it is, like, the most powerful man in golf at the moment, technically, is the boss of the PGA Tour. And they haven't spoken to him. And you've got 48 players, potentially 25 to 30 of them would be Americans. But you would have to say at least 90% of them would be PGA Tour players. And if they don't allow them to leave, you know, are they going to leave? And then if the RNA, like, there's so many pieces of the jigsaw for this to happen. That's the only, I think the concept essentially could be great. If you could wave a magic wand and go, right, we're going to do this. We're starting next January. And essentially we're going to take maybe 10 events off the PGA Tour, a few off Europe, blah, blah, blah. If you can wave a magic wand and make it happen, it totally makes sense. But, like, we have a situation, we had a general election a couple of weeks ago and you're trying to get a government together. This is the similar type of thing. So you're going to need a coalition partners within.
Then there's no chance of happening.
Yeah, well, that's the only reason. I think the concept is really good. And from the viewer point of view and the trickle-down effect, I think long-term it could be great. But getting everyone into bed or getting everyone to sing from the same hymn sheet is next to impossible, because the PGA Tour will not allow their top brass to leave.
There's another element of this as well. I think everybody who knows what the Ryder Cup is like, 3 days every 2 years, it's compelling from the day, from the moment the first ball is teed off at 8 o'clock or thereabouts on a Friday morning, all the way to the end on Sunday. Mostly it is compelling. So that's a 3 day event, obviously no cut. It's just constant tension and action. So they've got this team element to this World Premier League, which in the podcast is pretty well explained. And it's, I think, designed to give an extra element to it, so people become invested in not just a single player, they become invested in a team. There'll be 12 teams of four, and two players from that four will be nominated to score every day. So what they're trying to do there, I think, as well, is make Friday and Saturday quite kind of interesting, get people involved in a team, maybe even have betting involved. And I think there will inevitably be gambling involved in this as well, because gambling is now legal in America, isn't that right?
It's basically,
and this has revolutionized the approach to the coverage of golf, I'm told, with the involvement of Las Vegas bookmakers getting into the PGA Tour events as well as the other things that they do. So thereby you have an extremely well thought out solution to a problem which not many people might have thought existed. But when it's explained to you, how many people watch PGA Tour on Friday and Thursday with any great interest? They're trying in the World Premier League to make it compelling for three consecutive days. I think shortening it to 3 days is also a good idea, because the attention span is more engaged and there's no cut. So many things about this which are good,
which is similar to the tennis model. You know, the tennis play shorter tournaments, and then for the majors they play, you know, best of five sets. It's best of three for the regular events. So I get that. I just, you know, it's, Are they going to try, if they keep it within the traditions of the game, great, but are you going to really try sex it up and do, you know, miking players up? It's just not going to work.
Looks like it's going to try, Gary, but we'll watch this space and see what rumbles on, because I don't think it's going to end anytime soon.
No, certainly.
There was
not a
great breakthrough win at the weekend for Victor Hovland from Norway as well.
Yes, very exciting talent, as just shows the power of the PGA Tour. They had a proper event opposite the WGC, and he got his first win, his first Norwegian to win on the PGA Tour. And it's worth listening to the Norwegian commentary.
Do you know what, Gary? I think we have it.
Oh, cool.
For et øyeblikk. Ja, nå det bare å klamre seg fast her. Petter for Norges første PGA Tour seier her, Victor Hovland.
Gary, should he have delivered on his expectation before the weekend?
No, not really. I think it's such a big transition to go from amateur golf and to get onto the PGA Tour, the European Tour. And I mean, he was creating records his first, 18 or 19 events?
I think this is his 18th event in America. No, it's about his 18th event and he's won.
Yeah,
he only turned pro at the Travelers Championship after the US Open last summer.
And he played, 18 or 19 rounds, I think. He under 70. So
He had a consecutive run of rounds in the 60s, which I think equaled the previous record, and he just failed to get past it. Like, this is a former world number one, US amateur match play champion. Massive talent. Colin Morikawa and Matthew Wolff and now Victor Hovland have all won, having got their tour cards based on either sponsors' invitations. It's an extraordinary burgeoning of three talents in the game. Matthew Wolff doesn't look as though he has at the moment the same sustainability.
I believe he's
changed. Well, that swing is very well. I can't see him changing that swing. But Morikawa and Hovland are huge talents. Hovland's a ball striking machine. His strokes gained statistic tee to green are up there with Rory and Tiger in terms of Tiger at his best and Rory at his best. Doesn't seem to have a short game. He said himself, I suck at chipping. He said that after the tournament because he stuffed a couple of chips. And he's a smiley character.
Yeah,
he's very infectious looking, happy-go-lucky guy who will be a huge asset to golf if he becomes a star. And he might well be a huge asset to the European Ryder Cup team because he's moving on up that list with those world points that he gained, and he's up to number 60 in the world, just, what is it, 8 months into his professional mm-hmm. career. He's just moving in one direction. And he has a pedigree as an amateur, and he just seems to be seamlessly carrying that through to the professional game.
Gary, no, or the Honda Classic is this weekend. No Tiger, no Rory. Who do you fancy there?
Shane Lowry's making his first appearance there. He's played the course because he's living in that area. Keith Mitchell is defending, who I actually really fancy as a top player, but he didn't really bounce on from that win. I watched him in practice in Portrush and I was really impressed with him. But every week's a big week for Lowry. He's Open champion, the spotlight is on him, and it's a really difficult golf course. We've had Irish success here in the past with
Padraig in 2015
with Mr. Harrington, yeah.
And Rory's gone close before and he's not playing.
Yeah.
And it's about as much as who isn't playing in Honda. Honda mm. used to be one of the stops that got all the best players, or certainly two-thirds of the best players. And there's a whole load of them just not turning up. I think it's basically Brooks Koepka and Justin Rose. And it's just a symptom of how many big events there are at this time mm-hmm. of year. 2 weeks ago, the Genesis had 8 or 9 of the world's top 10. Last week was the World Golf Championship event, and players stayed away from that. And now we have the Honda Classics, really a poor field by its previous standards, because the run-up to the Masters has just got so many events of high reputation.
That is the only thing with the Premier League. I think, and I'm of an era that grew up, I wouldn't say you started watching golf when the Masters came about, but it was pretty similar, and there is almost a saturation point now. And the players can't play week in, week out. And I think that's why we're seeing, you know, even big events not getting full fields.
We see that in racing. You can't run horses every week, and it's called good programming if you can pick the right races. Mm. Has Shane Lowry set himself up nicely? A lot of big guns not going to the Honda, and he is going there with his target being the Ryder Cup.
It's a huge week. I mean, it's, you know, there's lots of points on offer, a lot of FedEx points for him, because that's obviously a huge goal. You know, the Ryder Cup is a goal, but he wants to get in the playoffs at the end of the season. And he's only played, this is only going to be his third PGA Tour start. So it's important for him. He finished, I think, 13th at Zozo. He's 29th last week. So he needs to get a couple of decent weeks under his belt, and he might as well start this week.
He's playing very consistently at the moment. Just consistently good, not consistently spark type of good. He just needs to find a spark, probably with the putter, see the ball going in the hole. We know how much talent he has and how he really feeds off the notion that he's going to play well. Because if Shane thinks he's going to play well, he probably will, you know, start to shoot in the 60s once he get a couple of rounds. Like he needs something like a 65, 66 around Honda, a tough course a fast start. And I think Shane has got that grit and steel about him that he would stay up there. Like he did it at the Heritage last year. Admittedly, mm-hmm. it didn't happen for him on Sunday, but he got up early with it and he stayed there. At the Open, he got early in the jostling with the leader, so to speak, mm-hmm. and he stayed up there. So I'd love to see him get off to a 66, 67 type of start, be up there at the leader, close to the lead, because I think he'll stay there all weekend and be in the mix on Sunday.
Well, there's not much on in my world this weekend, so I hope Shane Lowry can do that and I'll be entertained. Gary and Greg, thanks for joining us. We're going to take a break.
Game on
2FM. Weekdays from 6.